Well, many of you know I lost a friend a few months ago who died in a motorcycle accident. It was an accident. It was his fault. He made a mistake, and he paid for it with his life. At the funeral, I couldn't help but look at the body, wondering if that was it, if it was all over. This darkness, this void, whatever was happening, was just finished for him. It was a weird feeling, kind of a frightening thought, actually. But then again, I pulled myself back and remembered all the many people I've talked about and one's faith in what is beyond life. And I realized that it does continue. In a moment, R. Craig Hogan, PhD, will talk with him about the other side. Dr. R. Craig Hogan, PhD, is the co-author of Induced After-Death Communication, a New Therapy for Healing Grief and Trauma with Dr. Alan Botkin. He's also the author of Your Eternal Self, which is a book presenting hundreds of scientific sources that he believes prove that the mind is not in the brain. People's minds are linked. The afterlife is as real as this life, and consciousness actually changes the material world. He does remote viewing. He has a remote viewing test online at greaterreality.com that you can take to find out if you have the remote viewing ability. And here he is on Coast to Coast. Hey, Craig, how are you?
Good, George. How are you doing?
Good to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
Now, you've got a different background, though, right? The PhD is not in
In
the
something strange
studies.
in the psychic
Yeah,
community. No, it's
exactly.
not. My PhD is actually in business. I'm a business communications professor and have my own online business writing school.
How did a business communications professor, and I'm sure a very good one, end up investigating and writing about the afterlife?
Well, I was kind of drawn into it probably about 10 years ago now. I began to meet psychics. They came into my life, and I have no idea where they came from. Met a psychic, and she gave me a reading, and she said, "You have psychometry ability," meaning I can hold things in my hand and know things about the person who owns them. So she said, "Go home, take a deck of cards, and take one card at a time without looking at it, place it face down on your palm, and if it's cold, then it's black. If it's warm, then it's red. And make piles." And so I did that when I went home, and with a little bit of skepticism. And I had piles. I was making piles out of the cards as I took them and held them down in the palm of my hand. And it ended up with two piles. And after a while, I got tired of it. I had about 20, 25 cards. And I turned over the pile that was to be the cold black pile, and every one of them was black. Turned over the red pile, and every one of them was red, except one card. So I found out that I had psychic ability, and I had no idea before that. This is something that any one of the listeners can do. So they can take a deck of cards, and if they're going to get 50% or more consistently of one color or the other in those piles, that means they have psychometry ability. They can read things through their hands. So that was the beginning of it, and after that, then I found out that I can remote view.
You know, a couple days ago, my producer Tom was holding up cards, and I was trying to guess psychically what they were. He did it six times, Craig. I got one right, but the other five, it was the card I was thinking, but I didn't give him that one. You would think, you would see like a jack come in your head, but you'd say eight. Well, he'd flip it. It would be the jack. So I was wrong, but I was right. I would have been six for six with a deck of 52. That's pretty good.
And what happens is there is actually research. There have been studies that have been done with hooking people's fingers up to electrodes to find out whether they were stressed or not. And they were asked to predict the pictures that were going to be coming up on a screen. And they found out that if they asked people to predict the pictures that would come up on a screen, they would not be able to predict them well. They would be at a 50-50 chance, which means it was not from their predictions at all. But they did find that if they weren't asked to predict and they just measured their stress and they showed them erotic or gruesome photos, or else they showed them calm and babies and puppy photos, that they began to be stressful before the picture was even shown, even though they didn't realize that it was true. But as soon as they got their consciousness involved and they tried to guess what it was, then they lost that ability.
When you started investing, we'll get into the afterlife in a moment here, but when you were starting to look at psychic things with remote viewing, you then, I would guess, really started to convince yourself that the mind was not in the brain.
Yeah, pretty quickly after I was able to do remote viewing, I realized that there was something wrong here, because I discovered that people can remote view over thousands of miles. I could sit in my office in Illinois, and I can see something which is thousands or hundreds of miles away. And that means that an organized vision of that image must come to me. It has to be encoded in some way out there thousands of miles away and then decoded when it comes to me. But there's no orifice in my skull. There's no space it can come into. So that means that the mind can't be in the brain. And the other thing that I discovered was I can remote view best objects that are placed on a table or on a piano or something. And when I remote view a target, somebody says to me, well, remote view the target in my table someplace I don't know about, someplace in New Jersey. And what will happen is if that target on the table is not interesting to my mind, I'll go and look at other things in the room and I'll start sketching them. And I don't know whether that's the target or not, but for some reason, my consciousness will take a trip around the room and find the most interesting things, and then I'll start to sketch them. We have no idea why that happened.
Yeah. Are you in the Quad Cities area?
In Bloomington Normal.
Okay.
Down in the middle of the state of Illinois.
Well, there, how about that for my remote viewing capabilities?
You made the guess.
Yeah, I missed you.
See, you knew it underneath, but you made the guess.
What proof, though? People are going to say, what proof do we have that the mind isn't in the brain? What proof that do we have that the afterlife exists? And what do we say to them?
Well, there are two different things, and one of them is that we know that the mind isn't not in the brain, and one of the ways that we know that is because of remote viewing. We know that a person can remote view something, and the mind can see that, and it doesn't come through any orifice in the head. There's no place for it to come. No organized signal comes from another place. We also know that when people are put in Faraday cages, meaning they're lead lined,
yes,
that they still get the signal. So it's not energy. It's not electromagnetism that people are getting this. And the only reason that they can get it is that the mind is outside of the brain. It's not encased in the body. And so we know that it's not there. We also know that people can anticipate seeing pictures before they're shown. So in that study that I had mentioned to you, the computer would choose a picture to show, and it would either be a stressful picture or a calm picture. And what would happen is that when they hooked up the electrodes to the person's fingers and timed when the computer was showing the picture, they found that some people were able to see, to react to the picture 6 to 7 seconds before the picture was even chosen by the computer. So that could only happen if the mind was outside of the brain, because the brain, the body, had no access to that information, and yet the person knew that information. So those are two of the reasons. Another reason is because we know that blind people are able to reach out and grasp things within their range, but not knowing where it is, at a much greater than chance being able to reach out and whatever it is, wherever it is, find it. We also know that there are instances of echolocation, what they call echolocation, where a person is able to navigate, a blind person can navigate through the environment, and then they're saying that that echolocation is a result of being able to hear clicks and use sonar, but there's a young man named Ben Underwood who is blind, has two plastic eyes, and he's able to actually play video games, he's actually able to ride a bike, to throw pillows at somebody who's a distance away. And he can do all those things in spite of the fact that he has no access to vision, he has no eyes. And we know that it must be because of the fact that the mind is outside of the brain.
When my son was in Little League, when he was younger, and I'd go out and do some coaching with him, and there was a pitcher there the kid was pretty good. He had a good arm, but he was a little wild. So I tried to teach him how to throw the ball by locking in his mind where the catcher's mitt was, and do it with his eyes closed. And I got to tell you, Craig, most of the time, as he was throwing the ball to me, I was the catcher, with his eyes closed, after looking at it, visualizing it, and then closing his eyes, he hit my mitt.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And it was amazing. But that helped make him, this little kid, a better pitcher by just letting your mind create this.
And having the confidence, and allowing yourself to do it.
Yep.
And this echolocation that's being taught to blind people, they can learn how to do that. But if they're told that their faculty is gone, for instance, the hearing is gone, they can't use the echolocation, then they can't do it suddenly. And but it had nothing to do with the hearing. It had to do with their confidence that they were able to do it. So we know that if we have the confidence that we're able to do it and we allow ourselves to do it, we can do much more than it appears that we can do.
Now, how did you get this change then into the research of the afterlife? How did you do that?
Well, I had started, of course, with the remote viewing. And after a while, I began to realize that there was much more to the afterlife than I had realized. I had meetings with psychics and with mediums, and they were telling me things that made sense to me based upon what I understood from psychic ability. And as a result of that, then I pursued it, and I found out that, in fact, the afterlife is as real as this life. And now I know that there are at least 6 methods of communication by which we can consistently communicate with people in the afterlife. And we know about them today. It's just that they're not widely used.
What do you think the afterlife is?
The afterlife is the real world. This is the illusion. In other words, we have a strange interlude right now. We're going through a period in which we're having a physical experience. But underlying that is the consciousness that is the real life, and that's the afterlife. So it's the world of, you can say, the world of thoughts, for instance. We know that thoughts generate images, for instance. We can imagine our mother's face in our minds, but that comes from someplace, and it isn't coming from the brain. We produce that just by intending to produce it in our minds. And that place where that thought is, the place where that image is, that before we think it, that's the same place where the afterlife is.
Outside, Craig, of ghosts that haunt and demons that possess, why do these souls of the dead, of the physical dead, why do they seem to all go to the same area then? And I'm negating the heaven and hell. I'm just saying that, you know, the afterlife is like a depository of these souls. Why do they all seem to migrate there? Why don't they just float all over the place? And then we have to talk about reincarnation as well.
Sure. Actually, the afterlife is made up of millions of spheres and millions of planes. So it isn't one particular place. And they describe it as being vaster than we could ever realize. And they also talk about other planets. So that they do suggest that there are people on other planets and that they are having their own separate existence, but they are all part of the afterlife, the consciousness that we all have. And they then will progress from one plane to another based upon their spiritual growth. So that as they learn, then they automatically will progress onto another plane. But there are millions of planes. It's a vast, vast territory that we could never understand.
Is there a hall somewhere where souls are kept?
There is no place. No, actually, when you talk about a soul, you're talking about the mind. So a better word for it is the mind, and it's the same mind that we have, that we're thinking with and speaking with and making decisions with. That really is the soul. And so when we talk about the mind, our minds are outside or aside from the body, and they always are. And when the body's released, when the body's no longer used for this simulation, this earth school that we're in, then the mind continues where it always was, and that is in the after, what we call the afterlife, but it really isn't. It's really the basis of life. It's really the fundamental life. And this, then, is just a temporary experience.
In the mind, let's say in the dream state, what's doing the dreaming, the brain or your mind?
It's the mind. In the dream state, what they say is that we actually do go off to that place where people are having their afterlife experiences, whatever they are on another plane of existence. And the only thing that allows us then to go off to that space and have unusual experiences is the fact that that's where creativity lies, and that's where we are not tied to the conscious mind and not tied to the physical world. And so in that place, then, we can go off into flights of fancy. We can meet people whom we've never met before, experience things we've never experienced before. And it's because of the fact that the body is a limiting factor, and that is what enables us to navigate through the physical world. Once it's gone, once it's not being used, then we're off into that other realm, which we can call the greater reality.
Do you believe that the afterlife is almost like one large dream? Just goes on and on forever?
It's more like this life. So what they do is they describe it as being exactly like this life. In other words, you're sitting at a desk and you're looking at the walls and you're talking to people around you. The afterlife is just exactly like that. It's on a different vibration, but everything else is the same, except for the fact that there are no none of the drawbacks that we have that are associated with life. There are no ticks and there are no mosquitoes and there's no pollution, which we won't miss at all. And so none of the drawbacks, but the life is exactly the same. We have bodies. The bodies that we have are our bodies when we were 20 or 30 years old. They're young bodies. If a child passes away and goes into the next life, then they're reared there, and they will be reared until they're into their 20s or 30s. And from there, then, from that life, which is pretty close to the earth plane, then people mature and they go into higher planes of being and eventually become celestial beings.
Can those entities see us physically on this planet,
yes,
for example?
Yes. So in other words, they have the ability to see us and our vibration. Although we can't see them. Now the reason for that is because we're caught in the physical, and we navigate through the physical, mm-hmm, with the body that we're enmeshed with. And you can only say that we are integral with it, but it's difficult to say how or why. But they are not, they're in the thought realm. They're in that realm that's outside of it, that's the spiritual realm. And so they're not enmeshed in the body, and they can then see down onto the physical plane as well as on the thought plane that they're on. But they can't communicate very easily. And people wonder why Grandma doesn't contact me or Grandpa doesn't contact me. It's very difficult. They have the same problem that we have. They have to go to a medium, or they have to go to a spiritualist church, or they have to go someplace where they can communicate. So they can come down to the earth plane, and they can walk on the earth plane. They can go around, but it's very difficult for them to communicate with anybody. And it's very frustrating for them, especially when they've just passed away and they're at the funeral, and they see people sobbing, and they want to say, "Look, I'm fine. I'm here. Don't worry about me. You know, I wish I could tell you that," but it's very frustrating for them.
Why does this spirit, for example, leave the body upon death? Why doesn't it just stay with it, and that's what happens?
There are various things that happen at the point of death. Sometimes the person does stay with it. There's a story that from Leslie Flint's seances in which a man was walking with his wife down the street, and suddenly he saw something coming towards him, and then he saw everybody gathering around looking at something on the ground, and he couldn't figure out what it was. He looked over at what it was, and boy, it was somebody. He said, "It just looked exactly like me. It could have been my twin." And his wife was crying hysterically, and then he realized that it was him laying on the ground. And so he went with his wife, and they took the body and put it into the ambulance, and he had already passed away. He went in and sat in the ambulance with his wife and with somebody else, and he went to his funeral, and he said his wife had gotten a horse-drawn carriage for him, and it was all very nice, but it's so damn silly because there I was. And so it's possible for the person right after passing into the next life, to walk on the earth plane and to experience things on the earth plane. And
Craig, when we come back, let's find out how people can communicate with the dead. Couple little notes for you. First of all, if you haven't picked up the After Dark newsletter, you can do so and get 13 issues for the price of 12 by calling 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online at coasttocoastam.com. Also this weekend, I'll be in Santa Maria, California, at a major UFO conference with some heavy hitters like Whitley Strieber and Dr. Roger Lear and so many others. Just check the coasttocoastam.com website for the itinerary and come on by. And you get a chance to talk with Craig Hogan a little bit later on about the afterlife as we move on here with Coast to Coast. Let's talk, if we can, about how people, in your opinion, can communicate with people on the other side, or those on the other side, I should say.
Yeah, and we've been doing it for years now, actually for two centuries, and most people don't realize how successful we can be. It's very easy to communicate with people on the other side of life. One of the ways is induced after-death communication, and you know about that from Al Botkin.
Yes, another program a lot.
Mm-hmm, yes, and he and I, of course, wrote the book, Induced After-Death Communication, in which we have case studies and explain how it's been done. Actually, the technique is explained at the end of the book, and how people can be induced into having an after-death communication. And what happens is the psychotherapist sits down with them, takes them through the induction process using an eye movement technique, and they sit with their eyes closed, and they have a communication. And we know that they're real because of the fact that the people, the patients and the individuals who have them done say they're real, they feel they're real, and they also learn things from them that they couldn't have known otherwise. So we know that there are actual communications with the person who has passed away. There was at the VA hospital where he originally was using the technique, it was at a 98% success rate. So 98% of the people who went into this procedure came out having had an after-death communication. With other patients now or the outside of that venue, the success rate is around 70%.
That's huge.
Yeah, just amazing. And most often it's going to be a feeling that the person is there, a sense that they're there, a smiling face, a communication from them.
Is it a one-side communications, Craig, or is it two-way?
No, and many of them are actual conversations. So they have conversations back and forth. Not only that, but once they've been induced, they come back out and they explain to the psychotherapist. There are 36 psychotherapists doing these now. Once they explain it to the psychotherapist, if they say, you know, I had a question I really wanted to ask them, I wish I'd have asked them, psychotherapists can take them right back into it. So they can go right back and have the conversation with the person, and then they can get their question answered. So it's a powerful tool, and it's out there right now. 36 psychotherapists are using it. Thousands of people have had it, but in general, the public just don't know about it. And that's the reason that we wrote the book, because we wanted to make sure that people understand that induced after-death communication is very available. Anybody can have it. All they have to do is just find one of the therapists that are trained to do it.
There are some devices that are out there. One's called Frank's Box. There's another thing called the Spirit Calm. They're almost like telephones to the dead.
Mm-hmm. So the EVP, electronic voice phenomena, is another method by which people now are communicating with those who have crossed over to the next plane of life. Those also are very successful. People are actually using telephones. There's a woman in Brazil who does it routinely, and she contacts the deceased on the telephone, and the grieving person actually speaks with them.
What does she dial?
What is she dialing to be able to get them?
Yeah.
She uses a procedure, and through the procedure, then and it's also, it involves the technique and the fact that she's able to do it, and it's rather like it's mediated, rather like a medium does. But she's able to do that, and Spirit Calm, you mentioned Spirit Calm with Meeks, and that work has been done in which people can tape record the voices that are coming out of white noise, but they're very clear voices. I mean, these are people actually speaking, and so that happens routinely now. That's not very difficult to do, and people have had a great amount of success with EVP.
Do they ever warn us about some impending doom or anything like that? Do they go that far?
They are worried. They are concerned about the state of the earth now. But they describe it when they come down to the earth plane now. They describe it as like trying to penetrate a deep fog It's because of all the conflict and all the hatred and all the difficulties that people are having on the earth plane now. They don't say anything about a disaster, an impending disaster, an Armageddon or anything like that. But they do describe the fact that the earth right now is full of conflict and violence. Humankind is doing this to itself. They suggest that disease, for instance, would not have to be so profound as it is right now if humankind weren't creating the world that it's creating. And so what there are actually teams of people on the other side who are attempting with all of the power that they have at their disposal to help humankind to change. They want to see humankind grow. At the same time, there are other forces on the other side that are trying to impede that.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. So that there are forces, and they describe them. There are lower realms where there are forces of people who are trying to impede humankind's progress.
Why is that?
It's because of the fact that if you take a look at the world today and you look at the cross-section of people that we have, you have some people who are very compassionate and loving, and you can identify them. You also have people who are cruel and violent. You have the Adolf Hitlers, and you have the Stalins and the Idi Amin.
They have no emotion.
They have no emotion, or they're sociopaths, where they actually have a Swiss cheese morality, and they don't see anyone else except themselves. They have no compassion for other people. They cross into the next plane of life, and they're exactly the same. So in other words, when somebody crosses over into the next plane of life, they are the same 5 minutes after they cross as they were 5 minutes before. And those who are violent, those who are gangbangers, those who are cruel, will still be cruel and violent on the other side of life. And
they don't get better. Because I always thought, Craig, that perfection, you know, if you die, your soul continues to get better and better as you come back time and time again.
Yes.
Until you reach that level of perfection. Yes. But if I'm hearing you correctly, if you're evil, if you're bad, if you're rotten, you stay that way?
Well, they don't stay that way. You're absolutely right that they do progress. So in other words, they grow in the same way that people grow on this side of life. So that people become more spiritually mature as they go through life here. And that especially happens, we know that people in their 50s are more likely to have spiritual experiences in which they mature and become more spiritually adept. That happens in the next plane of life. Everyone will eventually evolve to a higher plane of being.
Well, through this reincarnation, I know a number of people. You know, I've got a friend of mine, she lives in Hawaii, and she's got to be as close to an angel as you can get. Does that mean that in terms of her soul progression, she's almost done? She's not coming back anymore?
But she's probably an old soul. She probably has gone through. But everybody, we are eternal. We never stop progressing. There is never a final point to which we come. We will always progress, and we will progress into being celestial beings that is in our future. That horizon, what we see now, and we say, that's a wonderful person, that's a compassionate, loving person, that's the horizon of what we can see. When we attain that horizon, there's another horizon in spiritual development. And when we attain that, there's another. And there are thousands and thousands of them.
But the bad souls, the Hitlers, for example, they aren't grabbed right away and put into this cesspool of fire and brimstone?
No, there is no hell. The hell was that's a myth that was created by the church in the first part of the first millennium. There is no hell.
Yet there is evil.
But there is evil. And there are lower-level spirits. There are spirits who are earthbound. There are spirits, for instance, who are still traveling around on the earth plane, and they're trying to influence people. So if there's a spirit who was on the earth plane when they were alive, they were arsonists, they'll look for somebody who is an arsonist, and they'll attach themselves to that person. And through their thoughts and through their influence, they'll try to get them to commit arson. They'll say, wouldn't that be wonderful if that building were on fire? And the person's being influenced by that. So lower-level spirits will attach themselves to people who have the same inclinations as they had. Or if they're drunkards, there are many lower-level spirits who spend time in taverns and places where people are habitually drunk, and they're attempting to influence them. And we know that that's true.
Why why would these spirits, the demon spirits, for example, why would they continue to come back regardless of how bad they were? I mean, is it possible that the soul of Hitler is walking around in a human body right now?
Not in a human body, but not as the soul of Hitler. But as far as the earthbound spirit is concerned, it's like pornography. So they can't participate, but they want to watch. So it's very much the same kind of thing. They're attached to the earth plane. They want to stay in the earth plane. And to do that, then they're going to find somebody they can attach themselves to who has the same inclinations they have. Now, as far as the Hitler type and Hitler's individual, Hitler is an eternal individual who will eventually mature spiritually. Where Hitler is now, we have no idea. But if Hitler is on the other side and has not matured spiritually yet, then could very possibly be attempting to communicate with and influence world leaders.
How about possession, then?
No, it is not possible for somebody to be possessed. Although, if a person is being influenced, it's purely a thought influence. If they're very susceptible and they're very weak, then they can be profoundly influence.
Well, what's an exorcism then?
That's really a myth. A person really can't be possessed by a demon and then exorcised. In fact, the funny thing is, in the seances that we have recordings of, in which people from the afterlife speak, they speak about how comical it is when somebody comes in and exorcises them.
What's happening though when a priest is trying to exorcise someone, and their voice goes from talking like this to, you know, I will kill you. What creates that?
There are people who will act out what they believe should be happening during an exorcism. In other words, they're playing their part. No, not consciously. But they believe that, well, this is an exorcism, and you can watch the televangelists, and you'll see people playing the parts of being the televangelist person, and they're doing the things the televangelist was expect them to do. And the same thing happens in an exorcism. A person can get caught up in that and can be exorcised. Now, on the other hand, there are lower-level spirits who do influence people.
And what do you mean by influence, then?
That means that they attach themselves to people and they think.
Is that like possession?
It's like possession. It is the fact that it's still thought, though. It's still simply being influenced, but it can be a profound influence. In other words, they can be very susceptible. And as a result of that being susceptible, then a person can be influenced to do things. We know that some sicknesses, schizophrenia or some pathologies, similar to that, are very often caused by someone who has attached themselves to the person, and that a psychic can be brought in who is able to then communicate with that entity, that person, and they can find out who that was and what they're attempting to do. So we do know that the lower-level spirits can have a profound influence upon people. And the way to help them out is to help them to mature out of that spiritually.
Where does the devil, then, fit into all of this, Craig?
The devil was an invention. There was actually no devil. The Old Testament didn't have a devil as such. In the Old Testament, the devil was not somebody who was an adversary to God. It was God and the devil would have conversations, as they did with Job, about what was going on in the earth. But Zoroastrianism in Iran then had a devil. And so then the devil was born out of Zoroastrianism, and it was then incorporated into Christianity. But there is no such thing as a devil.
Oh, boy, when we open up the phone lines, you ready for everything?
Sure.
Okay. Now, tell me about your personal situation in terms of communicating with the dead and what you have or have not been able to do.
I can do mental mediumship, not to the level of somebody like James von Prague or John Edwards or somebody like that, but I can do mental mediumship, and we actually have a circle in which we're attempting to do physical mediumship. We are going to be pursuing that because of the fact that it is possible for people to communicate And it's just a matter of having a loving, compassionate group who have come together for that purpose. And in that circumstance, then, it's possible for teams of on the other side who are just attempting just as hard as we are to communicate. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to work with the teams that we know are on the other side, the team that we know is there, to attempt to come through and communicate.
How do we know that it's not something we're imagining in our mind, in our brain, maybe? Mm-hmm. How do we know that?
Sure. And if somebody has a reading from a medium, or if you listen to a medium, this is the progression you should hear. First, there should be that they should say there is someone coming through who is an older woman. Now, so far, we haven't learned really anything. Everybody's kind of an older woman in their family someplace. And they may say this woman has passed, and that everybody's got that too. But then there should be some validation. So then they should say, this older woman owned a dog, and he was named after some famous person, and the dog had one leg removed and died early. And then you would say, that's a validation.
That
you should always look for a validation from a medium.
And the medium would come up with it without any coaxing, nothing.
Asking, because it's a cold reading if they don't. In other words, then they're fishing for information.
And the frauds try to fish, don't they?
The what? The frauds,
try to fish.
You can watch them do it. You can watch them fishing. But if a person is a genuine medium, then they will give you the specific information and they will validate. So the first thing that happens is they'll say who the person is who's coming through. The second thing is to get a validation. If you don't get a validation, that person is a fraud.
How does the fraud fish? So give us some pointers here.
What they do is that they'll use the general things like I started off with, and they'll say, I'm getting an older woman coming through. Does that make sense to you? And they say, oh, yeah, that's...
They want funny. You to interrupt, don't
yes,
they?
Yes, they ask you questions, and they want you to come through with something and say, oh, yes, that could be my mother. And I'm getting this person being, it's a woman on your side of the family, and so they're going to say things about mother,
yeah.
and they're going to fish and say something like, well, let's see, she passed away, and it was something having to do with the physical, and the person will say, well, yeah, she had a heart attack, and they'll say, yes, a heart attack, and then they'll just keep fishing like that.
I love the way they say things like, this older person has blue eyes, and they'll go, you know, the person will say, no, she has brown eyes. And the person says, yes. And then they just go on to the next thing.
Just go on to the next thing, right. And they'll keep fishing. And what happens is that the person is being read is so anxious for that person to come through that they'll allow themselves to believe the things that did come through, that four out of the 10 things that they guessed, and forget about the other, the six that were wrong. And that's not genuine mediumship. If the person is a genuine medium, they will come through with specific details.
The good medium, the very good ones, mm-hmm. generally, I have found, have an extremely strong light around themselves. Their personalities are positive. Negativity does not surround them at all, Craig.
No, and you can sense it. You can sense it with a person who's a genuine medium. They also have a strong sense of God. So that if you're speaking with a medium who is a genuine medium, they will have a strong sense of the higher power, because the higher power is a reality that permeates our lives. So all of us who study the mediumship and do some mediumship and psychic ability will have a strong belief in God. And as you say, there's a very powerful aura about them. There's a powerful feeling about them.
Let's talk about EVP sounds when we come back. We've all listened to them. I want to get your take on exactly why and how they are being communicated to us through equipment. And then we'll also talk about, do pets have souls, and a number of other things. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment with our special guest tonight, R. Craig Hogan, right here on Coast to Coast AM.